Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is Vinny with my co-host Mike. How are you tonight, Mike?
I think the term for tonight would be I'm okay. I've been better, but I've been worse.
And I think okay should be the state of most Met fans right about now. This is our 2015 recap coming on the heels of the Mets, you know, five-game loss in the World Series to Kansas City. And I want to talk – I think we need to talk about the World Series, Mike, but then also perhaps put 2015 in a broader perspective as every team that does not win the World Series. Everyone but the Kansas City Royals has to put their season in perspective, and I think the Mets, even though they were the second-to-last team standing, we need to do that as well. And then take a little bit of a look forward to what we think is coming in the offseason, although we'll have a lot of time to talk about that in the coming weeks. But I guess let's start with the World Series, Mike. We had, in our prediction show, we were throwing around things about the Mets in – I know I waffled. I tried to say 5.5 because I couldn't decide between 5 and 6 games. And, you know – the Mets won one game, and three other games they had the lead with Jeris Familia on the mound. So my prediction of 5 games is not so ridiculous, yet they only won one game. That to me is sums up how most Met fans, I think, felt immediately following the end of the series, which was it was a series that they lost 4-1. Fans were lamenting that they thought perhaps they could have / should have won 4-1. I want to get into some detail in this series too, Mike, but I want to pause there and get your thoughts on that kind of, prevailing feeling of the fan base, at least the day after the series, which I think it has dissipated a bit by now, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, you're not be disappointed. It's have an element of disappointment. You're so close. You're in the World Series. The game, although it only went 5 games, we had a lead late in 3 of the 4 losses that we lost in the series. We could have easily won this series in 5 games, and we had the guy on the mound that I picked for good reason to be the World Series MVP when we lost the lead in all those games. So, the losses were all, other than one, the losses tended to be excruciating. And, we were really close. I mean, for a 5-game series, it's harder to be, any closer to winning the World Series than the team came. And so, that, of course, is always going to be a disappointment as a fan when you're that close and you don't get it. But, in the broader sense, and we can talk about some of the big moments in a minute and the game by games a little bit. But in a broader sense, only 2 teams make the World Series. When we look back at this season, at some point with a lot more time behind us, we'll realize, what we're going to mostly realize is that it was one of the greatest seasons that the Mets have had, because they only have a certain amount of World Series appearances, and it was a great year.
No, and you know what's funny, I do want to get into the details, as you said, but just to kind of touch on what you had said and what I started in the intro, it was very strange because, and I don't mean close because they made the World Series, but close to what we indicated, they had their guy on the mound. They had the lead late in 3 of the 4 losses. It was what's really strange for me, Mike, is I have these 2 conflicting feelings when I think about the series. One is that, man, they were so close, and you start to agonize over certain moments in certain games, which we'll pick apart in a minute. But then I stop myself. And I do say, and it's not just rationalization, I say to myself, the Mets were clearly the second best team in this series. Kansas City did virtually everything right. And almost all of the mistakes to be made were made by the Mets. at crucial times of the game, usually eighth inning or later. And so when that's the case, it's you say, yeah, I know it's close, but if one team is bullpen is lights out and one team is getting the big hits, even by a guy who hadn't batted in the whole postseason, comes off the bench and gets a hit, pinch hit, game winning hit, essentially, you start to say to yourself, gee, I know it's close, but maybe it wasn't that close. Maybe, you know, this was Kansas City's year and it was a machine that we kind of ran into. And thinking about all of these little details that we'll go through in a second, maybe in the grand scheme of things, it didn't matter. Maybe it was just we were facing a team that, at you know, in October was playing at a different level than everybody else in baseball. Any credence to that, Mike?
I don't know. I mean, they played well. You know, they played very well. I think that, but the games were excruciatingly close. I think that when we looked at the matchups and we looked at this team, once we realized we weren't going to get the Blue Jays, I do think that they are put together in a way, and we brought this up before the series began, that you didn't want to be involved in close games with them late, because they've got a shutdown, you know, they've got a shutdown bullpen. That, in my opinion, is the biggest strength of the team, is their bullpen. And the other thing, let's not forget, is they are, you know, there's a lot of different ways to put together a winning team. And one of the things that they clearly have emphasized is very good defense. And so you get in a close game with them late, and the chances are they're not going to make a big mistake in the field and give you anything. And although in one game Hosmer did, and the other thing is, you know, that the bullpen just isn't going to give you anything. And it really played out like that. I also think there's something to be said about a team getting, you know, just sort of getting hot and feeling like they can't lose. And if they're in close games, they just think they're going to win. And maybe you have the opposite at some point. You know, of course, eventually we'll talk about the details of game five. You know, there was some real drama there in the, you know, ninth inning with Harvey. But one thing about game five, when I watched the game, Vinny, I have to tell you, I was the calmest I was to any of the games. Because, frankly, and I don't consider myself overall a negative person, but I kind of never felt like we were going to win the game. I know that sounds crazy to say, but I just felt like as soon as there was going to be an opening for KC, that was going to be it because of what had happened the night before. And the fact that it was the World Series and what had happened the night before was just so devastating. Because I kept thinking back to 86 when it was the reverse, when after we won what we'll call the Mookie Buckner game, even though we were behind 3-0 and it was getting late and everything about game seven, as far as being behind the Red Sox game, I just figured that sooner or later we'll put just a little bit of pressure on them and it'll just collapse. And I actually felt the reverse would happen, and I didn't want it to happen, but I thought it would, and it did.
That's very interesting, Mike. And I remember vividly 86, game seven, 3-0. Whoever I was with at the time saying, oh, my God, they're losing 3-0. And I know I've told you this before. I turned to them and said, I don't care if it's 10-0. They're not going to lose this game. There's no way. And so I had that same feeling as you. But I'll be honest with you, game five, I didn't feel that. I mean, I really thought they were going to win the game. I thought it was a very different game, but I was already comparing it to the 1999 game five, mm-hmm, Robin Ventura grand single game, mm-hmm, that it's, you know, an etched in stone Mets postseason memory. That one because of Ventura's hit, this one because of Harvey's performance, and then, mm-hmm, wondering what's going to happen in game six. Because if you remember game six of the NLCS in 99, that was a game the Mets had the lead at least twice late in the game. And they just couldn't hold on. And I was thinking, you know, this is going to be a game you're going to need DeGrom to come up big. You know, I was already thinking about Game 6 and DeGrom and how do we force Game 7. I really was there because, you know, especially because it was the ninth inning, and whether it was going to be Harvey or whether it was going to be Familia, I really thought they have a two-run lead. They're going to be able to hold this down and get three outs. I still was thinking of Familia as the pre-World Series Familia, that he's not going to give up two runs before he gets three outs. So, all right, let's go and talk about some of the games. I guess it's a little bit out of order. We're going to do this, I guess, you know, like a Quentin Tarantino movie. This is not going to be linear. Let's start with Game 5. You know, backs against the wall game. Matt Harvey comes out and pitches brilliantly. Curtis Granderson hits a home run in the first inning. So the Mets had an early 1-0 lead. They tacked on one other run. A lot has been made about the Mets. They had the bases loaded, no outs. They only got one run. A lot of people picked that apart. I have to be honest with you, Mike. In the moment, I was fine with that. I was more worried they were going to get no runs. When they got the one, I exhaled, and I thought it was fine. However, look, they only had, I think, to that point, like four hits. I'm sorry if I'm missing something. And two runs only. Harvey pitched great. He had about 100 pitches through eight. And so the decision was, okay, what do you do for the ninth inning with a 2-0 lead? Harvey with about 100 pitches. I was at the game. The crowd was chanting between innings, "We want Harvey." I personally would have been okay either way. I'm not being Monday morning quarterback here, and I know it's the wrong sport. I would have been fine with Familia starting the inning. I was fine with Harvey starting the inning. Where I had the problem was Harvey walked the leadoff batter on a 3-2 pitch, and it's not even and it's the sequence, okay? It's a few things. It's that he walked him on a 3-2 pitch, so it was six pitches. So he was probably, I think he was around 110 pitches-ish at that moment. The 2-2 pitch, Harvey threw a fastball that missed by a lot. And then the 3-2 pitch with a 2-0 lead, he throws a breaking ball that was ball. So that to me was the moment where I personally would have taken Matt Harvey out of the game, because on a 3-2 pitch up 2-0, you have to throw a meatball down the middle and say, go ahead and hit a home run, you cannot walk the guy. And the fact that he didn't have enough confidence to be able to throw a strike with his fastball at that point, that he threw a breaking ball, I would have pulled him at that moment. However, Terry Collins didn't. I thought Terry Collins' answer at postgame was a little bit of a head-scratcher, which was, if I decided to leave him in, then I don't see how you take him out after one batter. Mike, you've been watching baseball a long time. So have I. You've heard this, "I'm going to give him a batter" thing said by managers a billion times, right? So it wasn't so incredulous for him to then take him, especially on a 3-2 walk. He didn't pull him. He left him in. He gives up the double to Gordon, if my memory serves me correctly. So there was a runner on second, 2-1 game, no outs. So then he goes and gets Harvey out, brings in Familia, gets a ground ball to first, the runner advances to third. And then this is why I think the analysis of all the pitching and should he or shouldn't he have brought him in is irrelevant. Because at this moment, the game should have been over no matter who was pitching. Ground ball to third, Wright looks the runner back, throws to first. On the throw, Hosmer, not Gordon. Hosmer breaks for the plate. Lucas Duda throws the ball wildly away. It would not have taken an outstanding throw to get him. It would have taken a routine throw to get him, in my opinion, Mike. And that was another example of, again, it doesn't matter who's pitching. If Lucas Duda throws a routine throw to the plate, the game is over. The Mets win. They head to Kansas City for Game 6. He doesn't. He throws the ball away. The game is tied. And then, you know, the Mets had a chance to score and, again, force Game 6 in the 9th, 10th, and 11th innings. They didn't get – I don't think they got anyone on base those innings. And then, you know, they lose. Addison Reed gives up. I don't know if he was charged with all five runs, but he gives up five runs in the 12th, and they lose. So stop right there, Mike. Again, this is where I stop and say, yes, Terry made some moves. There's one. We're going to talk about another one when we talk about game four. But it really doesn't matter. It was in the hands of a routine play that a Met did not make is the reason why they did not win that game. It really wasn't because of Terry Collins, in my opinion.
Well, I think I have a similar take with a twist. You mentioned not being that, you know, hung up on them only getting the one run. I differ on that. I think it was important that we break the game open there. I think that, again, if you look at how the teams are put together, we have consciously as an organization chosen – supposedly, and I'm not trying to kill these guys. I'm just saying, you know, if we look at the short series that just got played, hitting over fielding. Well, it sure showed in the field we didn't get the fielding. And I'm going to mention the play that not many people mention in a second. But we didn't get the hitting, you know, other than one game. And, you know, if we break the game open there, if Matt Harvey goes to the mound with a 6-0 lead there, then sure, then come on, we're going to win that game. And you know, instead, here we go again. The margin of error for a team that makes errors was too small. I would have also taken Harvey out after the walk. I wanted him to go out for the ninth, like probably most of the, you know, free world. But I also thought he, you know, one batter, when he walked the guy, I thought that would be it. I was very surprised that he was left in. However, not that he wasn't hit well, but Conforto misplayed that ball. People are not focusing on that. And I'm not trying to kill the kid, but here's another guy that we have that's really not, he has to hit, he did hit in some big spots, because he's not a plus defender. That ball was catchable.
No,
and
that
if
is
Conforto
a good point.
Catches that ball, if Conforto catches that ball, there's that, just like with Duda, which absolutely Duda should make the throw, that inning plays out very, you know, very differently. Now Harvey has an out. So, you know, you've got two misplayed balls in that, you know, one misplayed horribly to do the play. Conforto's, it would have been a tough catch. I went back and looked at tape. I definitely think that ball was catchable. I think you know, that's sort of some bad luck in that. I think if we had a normal outfield in that situation, if he hadn't hit a ball off his knee, would have been Lagares' center and Cespedes' left, and I think Cespedes catches that ball.
You know, that's a good point.
You know, it's kind of a perfect storm situation. And, you know, at some point you just have to throw up your hands and give credit to the Royals too, who did pressure necessary. They knew we were a team that couldn't defend, and that was clearly part of their game plan to make us, you know, make plus.
You're right. And again, I don't disagree that the offense was a problem. I was more focusing in my mind on the problem being you had three chances where if you score, the game is over.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't do anything offensively. And I know Kansas City's bullpen is good, but,
mm-hmm.
hey, they mm-hmm. scored off Familia, okay? If they're going to score off Jairus Familia in three games, we should be able to score a run off of their bullpen, not Wade Davis, in the ninth, mm-hmm. 10th, or 11th inning. That's just my take.
I mean, the team didn't hit, right? I mean, they really didn't.
No, they didn't hit. They did not hit. They had some home runs, but that's about mm-hmm. it. I mean, let's jump backwards to game four, which mm-hmm. was really the turning point of the series. Well, actually, mm-hmm. if you want to get philosophical, Mike, the turning point of the series was game one.
Right.
When Alex Gordon hits the home run in the ninth inning off Familia, because
right.
that to me was the way you said earlier about the feeling about one team was going to win, one team. That was the moment where it reminded me of game one of year 2000. And I know we were contractually obligated to never mention the 2000 World Series ever yeah. in our lives. But it felt like that game.
Four was our chance to erase that. And then instead it was almost like we emphasized it.
Right, now let's go to game four. Okay, game four,
mm-hmm.
The Mets had a 3-2 lead going to the eighth. And Tyler Clifford comes on, and again, at that moment, you're probably thinking like me, and supposedly Terry Collins was thinking like me also, which is scary, which is Clifford is in until you can justify bringing Familia into the game. That was the thinking. So Clifford got the first out, right? So I'm thinking we're in good shape now. We only need really maybe one more out or, you know, if at most to get Familia in. If not, there's a little bit of trouble, you get him in. He walks a guy, Clifford. At that moment, in my mind, you bring Familia in. He did not. He left Clifford in to pitch to another batter who he walked. So then it's first and second, one out. Then he went and got brought Familia in. Again, same as game five. He gets a ground ball to start, you know, his first batter, and it goes right under Daniel Murphy's glove. And the tying run scores. It becomes first and third. The infield comes in, I think, and then a ground ball goes up the middle. It gives the Kansas City Royals the lead. Murphy fields that ball. The Mets are up 3-2 with two outs. Runner on third. You know, Familia has to still get an out to get out of that inning. But I would still feel pretty good about the Mets' chances. Murphy's Murphy. Murphy makes a bonehead play often. We kind of forgot about it because Murphy was out of his mind, Superman Murphy, offensively in the first two series that, you know, and he didn't expose himself anywhere. He even made a great base running play in the postseason. And then all of a sudden he turned back into Murphy in the field, and that did it. Now, again, I would have taken a Clifford out earlier. I would have brought Familia in batter earlier. So I disagree with Terry's move. However, similar to game five, I'm going to give him a bit of a pass, and I'm going to put this one on Murph. You got to field that ball. But we didn't. You know, one of the things you say, how nobody mentions Conforto misplaying the ball. I saw it absolutely nowhere that Lorenzo Cain says he yelled at Murphy when he ran past him. Alex Rodriguez yelled at a guy once on the field, and he was, you know, basically called the biggest Bush League player of all time. And Cain did it. Nobody even said anything. I saw Cain interviewed on MLB Network saying he did it. This isn't speculation. Does that matter? No, it doesn't matter. I just find it interesting that nobody jumped on that at all.
Well, I mean, look, they're a good team, but the Royals are an interesting team when it comes to all that. And so, we could discuss. Let's discuss the game we won, and what I thought was their wild overreaction to a pitch that, you know, was nowhere near hitting Escobar. I mean, that was just. You know, that was just wild. I mean, and coming from a team that has a very deep recent history of throwing at guys.
No, yeah, absolutely. And look, let's go again. I know this is pretty. I love this that we've gone backwards. You go backwards to game three. When the Mets won game three and Noah Syndergaard pitched very well, the Mets scored runs, and Kansas City was complaining about the first pitch of the game. Being up and in to Aceetis Escobar, which it was up and in is being a little generous. It was up. It wasn't really that far in.
He would have had to dive across home plate to get hit with it, which I guess was kind of the point.
Exactly.
Home plate.
Exactly. And the fact that they were talking about it so much after the game, I almost thought the Mets were in their heads. And if they won game four, which they had a 3-2 lead and going to the eighth inning, I thought this series could be turned around and that the feeling that the Mets fans and perhaps the Mets players had and the feeling that the Kansas City Royals had after winning game one, that the Mets had a lead, Familia gave up the home run to Alex Gordon with one out in the ninth, which that killed me, Mike, because I was looking ahead at the lineup. And the next batter, and I can't, I know this is going to sound really terrible, but I'm going to say the Brazilian guy, because I can't remember his name. You can laugh if you want, was up next. I'm thinking if he gets Gordon out, there's no way that guy's hitting a home run off Familia. This game's over if he gets Gordon. And so that's why it really killed me that Gordon hit the home run, because to me, he's the last out.
Well, it kind of, that one that one really bothered me for a lot of reasons, the most important being they lost. But that pitch, that quick pitch, is the only pitch he throws that's hittable. You know, he's got too good stuff to rely on. You know, LaTroy Hawkins needed that. You know, Familia doesn't need that pitch. And I'm trying to remember who it was, but somebody hammered one that could have been a home run foul off the quick pitch in that same inning.
Yeah, I think it might have been Salvador Perez. I think it was Salvador Perez.
Somebody did. And that should have been the end of it. You know what I mean? Right then and there, that should have been the end of it then.
I know these guys are professionals and that Familia has been great. But if I looked up at the scoreboard and noticed that, you know, Gordon is really the last chance, I don't understand how somebody, Worthen, David Wright, somebody doesn't go out to Familia and say, look, this is the guy. You know, no games, no anything. This is it. You make sure this guy does not hit the ball out of the ballpark. That's the only thing you worry about. But
as far as Familia goes, it was an absolutely bizarre World Series. That was the only game where he really made any kind of a major mistake. It was one batter, right? It was just, okay, what can you do? Even though the other two supposed blown saves, I'll call them, right, he got ground balls and people threw it away.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no other way to put it. I mean, he got exactly what you wanted. And guys made awful fielding plays. I mean, the Murphy and Duda plays, I don't know whose was worse, because Duda's throw was absolutely atrocious. He had him by 15 feet.
Yeah, he really, you know, a good throw. I'm emphasizing the word good because it didn't have to be special. A good throw gets him easily. And that's what's so frustrating about it.
Well, I was excited he was going. Like, they keep giving him credit for going. It was a bad play. He should have been out.
Artie from Brooklyn, who will not be joining us tonight, Artie from Brooklyn said, that's the kind of play that Murphy makes and makes us scratch our head, that he would have tried to come home from third to end the game.
That's true.
So he was thinking the same as you, is that, you know, in grand scheme of things, it was a dumb play. And what I said, and I might have texted it to you in the moment, another thing that killed me about it, and I know he probably went on his own, but Kansas City third base coach held the runner in game 7 last year with 2 outs and Bumgarner on the mound. They didn't try to score the guy. They were hoping for a miracle, another hit off Bumgarner, who they probably got, you know, no hits off him in 5 games. Yet they sent him now.
Well, I guess they learned from their mistakes, right?
I think so. And look, that takes us to our look ahead. You know, Kansas City lost the World Series last year. They lost a couple of key free agents last year. They retooled. They came back. They obviously were focused based on their World Series loss, and they came in with purpose and won the World Series. Can the Mets turn around and do the same thing, Mike? They're going to be faced with an offseason with some free agent decisions. They're going to have to live with this sting. And they're going to have to try to do exactly what Kansas City did, which is, you know, use the pain of losing the World Series to fuel them in the next year. What do you think happens looking ahead for 2016?
There's a lot, you know, look, there's a lot to come. We know there's work to be done. We did rent a certain amount of our offense this year, and those rental agreements have now expired. But the pitching, we know the pitching is lined up, you know, knock on wood, to be really top-notch again. You could argue that if we could get to the postseason, maybe these guys would have a little more stamina a year from now, you know, being a year older, and the way they work these innings now, where they're, you know, stretching everybody out another 15 innings a year. There's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. I am optimistic. I'm looking forward to the off season, you know, with the idea of we really have a shot to put together a really strong team again. But I am also, of course, a little wary of the fact that it had been 15 years since it's been to the World Series. We know how many years, you know, it was before the 2000 World Series. It's not so easy. So that's why it did sting a little bit, because I hope that we get back in short order, whether it be next year or the year after. I hope we're in the playoffs again next year. I hope for all these things. I don't think we're set up badly for that, but I do worry, because I thought 2006 was the start of a run of playoff appearances, and it didn't turn out that way.
Look, I'm in the same camp as you. You have to be optimistic when you realize that next year the starting rotation, is Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard, Mats, and then Zach Wheeler midseason, hopefully. That's a top-notch rotation. But I worry, look, are you going to have those guys? Is someone going to get hurt? If you look at history, you'd think somebody on that roster, maybe it's Syndergaard, is going to be getting Tommy John surgery. I mean, I hate to say that. I don't want that to be. But, that's the kind of thing that happens around the game. And then offensively, look, a lot of the guys who made the difference from the pathetic John Mayberry Jr., Eric Campbell offense of June that to the, red-hot offense that led us to the postseason that was there in July, August, most of those guys are gone. I mean, Conforto will be here, and he could be a big difference maker offensively. But they do have holes to fill. The bullpen's got holes to fill. They have a decision to make very quickly on Daniel Murphy. I think tomorrow is the day that they would have to make a qualifying offer to him. And regardless of whether they make a qualifying offer to him or not, most likely, even if they do, he'll reject it. And then it'll be, do they go make a long-term contract with Daniel Murphy? All indication seems to be that they won't. Cespedes was the big bat. I know he fizzled out in the postseason. He was not nearly the impact player he was in August and September. But if they don't re-sign him, that's you're back to that scrappy lineup that you had before he came to town. So it's a critical offseason. I mean, I think the optimism is there because of the pitchers, and because, look, Sandy said, and it was insane to say it, that if the fans come out then they start getting some attendance, then they'll have money to spend. We criticized them for it, but then it happened. They won with that team. They got an increased attendance. They got the maximum number of games they could get. They lost in five. They got their three World Series games, Mike. They got all the revenue they could get from their games. Now are they going to go spend it? Are they going to improve the team? If so, how are they going to do it? That's what we're going to have to watch over the next, 2 months or so, Mike.
Yeah, and we'll call that the teaser. But the only thing I'll weigh in on right now, because it's right in front of us, is I really will be disappointed if they don't extend the qualifying offer to Murphy. I think they definitely should do so. I do think he'll reject it. It gets you a draft pick if he does sign somewhere else. From what I've seen in the last few years, it also does seem to depress the market a little bit. These teams, us and Kadir notwithstanding, teams do not seem to love to give up these picks. And if we want to try to retain Murphy, it might be helpful if other teams know they'll lose a pick to sign him. I think for a lot of reasons. And if he somehow accepted it, I understand it would be a very high one-year salary, but it would be for 1 year. We're coming off a successful year from a revenue standpoint, right? It wouldn't be a long-term commitment. But I don't think he'd accept it. I really hope they do the offer for Murphy. Other than that, I kind of hold my thoughts. We have, plans, just as we did last year, to do a number of hot stove podcasts. We have a whole cold winter to use a hot stove to try to keep ourselves going.
Absolutely. And, Mike, I guess just before we sign off, one thing I think we do have to mention. Yesterday, the Mets announced that they had given Terry Collins a 2-year contract extension. And look, we just went through the whole, thing about the World Series and a couple of questionable moves here and there. But bottom line is, Terry Collins did deserve it. He kept the team that had that ridiculous offense of guys like Campbell and John Mayberry Jr. and all that. He kept them, afloat. And he presided over that playoff run. You to give him 2 years is fine. I'm fine with that, Mike. I think he deserves it. I think it's good for him. Good to have some continuity there. Again, for a baseball lifer, this is, and he's already kind of hinted, I guess, off the record that he's going to even say it at any kind of press conference or anything. But I think at the end of this 2 years, he's probably going to retire. Giving him these 2 years, I had absolutely no problem with, and I think it's well deserved.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the World Series for the first time in 15 years. I just don't see how you turn around and change the manager. You know, even if we disagreed, and we only disagreeing like slightly, as we said, there was other ways to win those games. You know, with those moves. Yeah, there was not that. That was a no-brainer. We knew it was coming. If you had heard the things that Alderson was saying in those celebration locker rooms over the, you know, about Terry, it was pretty obvious that that's not the things you say about your manager if you're thinking at all about really doing his duties.
That's true. That's true. So, but look, Sandy's got his work cut out for him. A lot to do. Again, we said it the last couple of off seasons, them being critical off seasons. But I think this time we really, really mean it. This is a huge off season for this team. Expectations are so much higher now because of that World Series appearance. And the holes they're going to look to fill are going to be big. So it's really going to be big. We'll put out our schedule on social media when we'll have some of our Hot Stove Edition podcast. We'll probably have the first one, I would imagine. We don't have the exact date set, but I would imagine if it's not next week, it's the following week, something like that. Mike, before I let you go, I'm going to ask you one last question. While we close the book on 2015, who is your Met of the year for the 2015?
That's a good question. And I always was leaning towards Familia. But after that World Series, I just can't lean there anymore. I mean, he still had a fabulous year. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to go to Grandison. I mean, Grandison was just a rock. He really had an excellent year. And there were times during the season he was the entire offense. He ended up also having really one of the few guys that I felt comfortable with a bat in the hands of the entire postseason. Yeah, I'll go with Curtis Granderson. Played a solid right field, too.
Yeah, that's the downside of letting you go first. I thought my pick of Curtis Granderson for Met of the Year was going to be, considered an eyebrow, raise your eyebrows. But I because it's funny, the reason why I pick him is probably the same reason you pick him. There are guys who had moments that were bigger than Curtis. For sure. I mean, you could even, use guys, even somebody like a Wilmer Flores, Mike, had more big moments, perhaps, than Curtis. But Curtis had the day in, day out. He was the most consistent player on the team. And in the playoffs, it was really funny. Defensively, in the playoffs, he probably played better defensive right field in the World Series, perhaps, than he did the whole regular season. It was amazing. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think he was the Met player of the season. So congrats to Curtis. And good news is that a lot of the other players that we could pick wouldn't be here. Curtis will be here next year. So that's something else for the Mets to hang their hat on for 2016. That about wraps it up. So thanks, Mike. We'll let everybody know when we'll be back, hopefully soon. And I'm sure you'll be watching tomorrow to make sure we get news about this qualifying offer. We'll keep our eyes out for that. And we'll let everybody know when we'll be back on the air. Thanks again, Mike.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. Let's go, Mets. See you in 2016, right? Opening day, 4-4-16 in Kansas City. That's their next game. But we'll have plenty to talk about in the hot stove in the next coming weeks. So let's go, Mets.